Mutual UFO Reporting Network has been in existence for about 40 years. A little over 100 days ago, this organization started their STAR Team Investigations Unit, a rapid response team ready at a moment's notice when a major UFO sighting or incident is reported. They are ready to investigate.
That's northwest of Detroit. Did you see that light?
Yeah.
Well, that's where I saw it, a real bright white light, sometimes flickering underneath the clouds.
Oh, this is where I saw it.
Air Shuttle 5959, is that traffic that you saw earlier, did you see him out there any longer?
That is Shuttle 5959, and that's affirmative, and it's a light that kind of, it goes dim and it gets bright. I don't know if we'll get closer to it or what, but it looks like a rotating light around it, like a frisbee type thing, and it's going around it.
Was that a 3179, do you see the same thing?
Sir, I saw it coming out of Detroit. I wondered, all that I saw was just a couple real bright flashes of light, and it almost looked like lightning, and it caught my eye, and then I kept watching it, and then it looked a little bit less bright, but it looked like it was underneath the cloud deck to me, and this is just as we were coming out of Detroit.
Yeah, hey, just to keep this advised, we're descending to 4,000 feet right now, and as we descend to 10,000 feet, that object is above us right now. It is not on the ground. It's about 10,000 feet.
We're checking on it right now. I still don't have anything out in front of you at all that I'm showing it. I appreciate you coming back to the frequency and let me know.
I'll keep it right. I'll tell you what, that is weird. If you're sitting up all day.
Masaba 3179, when you flashed your lights, did you get any response?
It appeared to, sir.
Okay.
That was an actual recording of an incident involving the air control operations at Cleveland, Ohio. For years, these lights in the sky would get investigated on a more or less casual basis. But now, using the latest technology, MUFON's STAR Team is doing some amazing investigations into close encounters, abduction reports, mysterious beings in the night. These investigations occur almost instantly. You have heard a lot about MUFON over the past weeks on this show, and we thought it was time to reveal exactly what is happening with their fast-track investigations unit, known as the STAR Team. On the line from Memphis, Tennessee, we have Chase Klotsky. She's Deputy Director of Investigations and STAR Team Manager for MUFON. Chase, welcome to the show, and how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Chase, let's get right to it. You're the STAR Team Manager for MUFON, and explain to our audience exactly what the STAR Team is.
Well, the STAR Team project is a rapid response and deployment strategy that basically targets high-value investigations. We typically accept the most experienced forensic-minded volunteers in MUFON. We also have team specialists that assist in things like laboratory and photo analysis, aviation, artifact recovery. We also have designed four STAR team to identify certain cases and events that are national, a system called MATCON, and that stands for MUFON Activity Condition. So we have a MATCON administrator, and I also have one CMS administrator who has actually been with me since day one. And we investigate the most complicated and high-profile cases that are reported to us through our case management system.
Chase, do you physically go to these cases, or are you just administrative? I mean, assign people?
Basically, kind of oversee and organize the investigations. As I don't physically go there. I'd love to. That would be great, but I'm not necessary. I'm more the organizer. So it's my job to identify when we have these Category 3s or STAR Team triggers that kind of complicate some of the cases, and from there, I contact the state directors, and I mostly work with them. The state directors are probably the biggest role in the STAR Team deployment, and the greatest asset because of their logistics, information, and knowledge of the state.
So these reports that the state directors are not involved, That's wrong.
Yeah, that's absolutely wrong. And the state directors are my main point of contact. I very rarely talk to the investigators unless the state director chooses that to happen. But it's their choice. So if we have a case that comes up and I contact the state director, and, you know, life happens. You know, they may have jobs or other responsibilities, family matters at the moment, and they direct me to what we call a star team coordinator in their state, then that would be my direct point of contact. But the state directors completely run all events in their state as to even who I talk to as far as coordination. Absolutely.
Chase, when did the STAR team concept come into existence? I mean, it actually, you know, started.
We launched, believe it or not, October 15th, and it's growing so fast, and things are happening so fast, and the information revealed from STAR team has been so significant, it's kind of hard to believe we're barely 100 days old. It really is. I feel like I've been doing this for quite some time, but... we've only been launched since October, yes.
You told me in an email that you had 9 cases recently, and I guess 3 of those have been solved already?
Some of them have. We typically report, the most sensational, of course, you know, the big events that are yielding information that, you know, ufologists and other people are interested in. We have several cases going on, but usually, you know, like everyone else knows, when you're investigating, you have to chase 100 to get that one. And we are getting that one, but we're also chasing the other 99. So we are a very busy team. And we now, I believe, are on 5 full activated events. We are constructing conclusions on 2. And we have a possible on the table this morning. So we're very busy.
So literally, you're getting new cases almost every day.
Yes. MUFON averages a little over 500 cases a month.
Well, what would trigger the STAR team? I mean, what kind of cases gets your attention?
The first trigger is absolutely any witness that is reporting physical effects, physical evidence, anything left behind is definitely a STAR team trigger. Usually large events, things when we start seeing things develop into flaps, there's just anything that's a little more complicated that would require some sort of specialty involved with, you know, just a plain investigation. Definitely.
Before the show's over, I want to get into some specific cases if we can. But first of all, I guess let's talk about the STAR team objective for MUFON. I guess it would be to have these STAR teams in every state, maybe more than one in each state.
Yes, that's exactly our goal. In MUFON, to be a field investigator, you go through the training program that involves the field manual, and you take a test. And once you're completed with that training, you kind of start out basic, get used to our CMS and you know, the ethics behind investigating. And once you get your feet on the ground, you just get more experience with more cases. The STAR team takes the most experienced, and we're also looking for forensic-minded investigators. Now, if somebody, you know, with a police background or military background or already comes to us with a specialty, they can apply for the STAR team, and if qualified, absolutely, they're put right on. But our goal is 50 states, and that is happening very quickly. There's so much talent in MUFON, it's kind of easy to fulfill this goal pretty quickly.
Chase, in a previous interview with Clifford Cliff, the International Director, he spoke highly of you. I think it would be appropriate if we told our audience, maybe flesh out a little bit about you. What do you think? Tell us about yourself.
I got this job. I just applied. An email went out, I believe, to everybody stating that they were looking for a new STAR team manager. And at the time, I'm a field investigator. I've never held a state position or anything. I've always been a journal subscriber or a field investigator. And I just realized I had time to invest, and I really, really wanted to have more responsibility and to do more in MUFON. So I applied for it. I felt I had good organizational skills, and of course, you know, been around the military basically my whole adult life.
I know your husband. He's in the Navy.
And I also work for the Department of Defense as a civilian, as a master trainer, master instructor, and I specialized in active duty readiness.
And what does that mean?
That is, we got them ready for whatever, I guess, their next step was. I worked with the dive teams. I've worked with SEAL teams, Marines, before they went to CQB. We physically got them ready, physically and mentally ready for, you know, strenuous schools. If they were going to dive school, it's a very strenuous activity. So we made sure they were physically able to complete whatever assignment they were given, whether it was training, full deployment. It was my job to get them to that level of readiness.
How long have you been interested in UFOs?
Pretty much my whole life. I joined MUFON in 1996. Being a military spouse, I haven't always been able to keep up and in the loop in MUFON. We travel all over the world and have been overseas, and so it hasn't always been easy to keep up. But, you know, I did maintain, through books and internet and, you know, very fascinated with it. And when we got back to the States, realized I have to do this. So I got my field investigator certification and have been pursuing it ever since. You know, it kind of depends on where you live and how involved the state directors are, as far as meetings and things like that on, you know, the information you get. But I honestly have been a big fan of what MUFON does for many, many years, and I feel very, very fortunate that I get to do this job now.
I understand you're originally from New England, but you're in Tennessee right now, near Memphis?
Right outside of Memphis in a town called Millington. My husband is still active duty. He has 24 years in. He's a submarine officer, and I know the first question going through everyone's mind right now is, what's a submariner doing in Tennessee? But, we're here on a shore duty, and he's a detailer, so that's where we are right now, temporarily. We have about another year left, and who knows what's next.
So the Department of the Navy does not mind a major submarine officer, high-ranking officer, to be... to have his wife involved in UFOs?
Jerry, I seriously have to tell you, I had some concerns about that, and I've heard nothing. He's heard nothing.
Okay.
You know, especially being the star team manager. We've had no problems at all. As a matter of fact, the interest that I get from even other wives and other active duty, they just think it's great. They're always asking questions. We go to functions, and as a matter of fact, my neighbor... her husband's a Navy pilot, and she just got her field investigator certification. The interest is just phenomenal. It's growing. People are excited. The giggle effect when you say UFO is leaving, you know, especially in social arenas. I will admit that hopefully I could continue to do this, but honestly, we have not heard anything about it so far. And
I just brought that up because we all have heard the stories that the Navy is the lead agency investigating UFOs, not the Air Force. I mean, you know, that's scuttlebutt around.
And I understand that. I absolutely do.
But
I can tell you...
You haven't had any problems with the Navy at all about it. I want to understand this completely now, Chase, about your UFO interest. I mean, have you seen UFOs?
No, just always had a fascination, and I think it probably started with TV shows as a kid. And I don't know if the first realization of UFOs came from a movie or, you know, there was always a little bit of the scare factor, but, you know, as I grew, I just became more and more interested. And, of course, books. I remember at 16 reading Chariot of the Gods. And, you know, so very fascinated from a very young age. It's just always kind of been with me. But Nope, I hadn't seen a UFO that I would consider, you know, something very unexplained that I've witnessed with my own eyes until last year.
And what happened last year?
Last year we had a case in Middle Tennessee, and I was out there with a secondary field investigator, and we did witness a very, very large triangle that flew directly over our heads. There were many lights in the sky. We were out there seeing all of this, and actually throughout the evening there were several incidences for us to witness all sorts of.
Yeah, in a previous interview, Clifford Cliff and I talked about that a little bit, but let's hear from you. You're the firsthand source here.
Yes, that's exactly the case that happened. It was
a close encounter with a 3.5-foot ET. You have to tell us about it.
Haunting. I'm not even going to lie. We had this feeling as I'm experiencing some equipment failure, and I'm trying to figure out the batteries and reloading this stuff. I thought I had a battery drain, which wasn't true. Just everything was frozen and not working. But our batteries had come back online. But I had decided to put fresh batteries into a few of the key pieces of equipment I had out there. And as we were working on that, you know, just this overwhelming sense of fear and just something I've never, ever experienced before. And it was like the whole body. It was terrifying. And
so this feeling of fear was much more than just foreboding.
Absolutely it was. And I remember turning to the witness and the other MUFON investigator and saying, does anybody else feel like you're being watched? And I don't mean from up there, but being observed from here. And it was just a few quick moments after that for some odd reason, nobody said run, nobody said anything. We just knew to get out of there. We all three just turned and ran. It was after we started running, the witness had this large flashlight in his left hand, and we kind of had to turn to where the truck was because we're in the middle of this 60-acre cornfield. I mean, it was just this big open space. And as he turned, the flashlight beam kind of swept across the field, and he stopped and said, you know, what the blank was that? And he turned the flashlight back, and we were running so fast at that point, he had stopped so suddenly, I actually ran into him, and I stopped behind him, and my eyes also went to where he had landed, and that light landed flat on this little being that was just there. It felt a lot longer than that, but It was really just that 1/1002. We just ran after that.
What did it look like?
I have to tell you, I was very shocked because, you know, everything that we read and all the research that I've done and been involved in, it wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to look like. It didn't have those big almond eyes. I call it the cute little Roswell alien. That's not what I saw at all. 3.5 foot, had that gray appearance. It didn't look like it was...
Chase, I need to let the audience know that we have some construction going on here at our studio. And so there'll be some noise in the background. And so we're getting interrupted. But not by the government. It's by carpenters. Now, go ahead. Tell us a little bit. It did not look like the regular gray.
It just didn't move. There was no reaction from this at all. Not a twitch in a finger or, you know, it was just completely stoic and almost mechanical. However, it was clearly biological. The eyes were kind of more human-like than, you know, the typical, you know, dark, large almond shape. And I was stunned by the appearance, actually, because it wasn't anything that I expected it to look like. If you're going to see a being, that's kind of my first thing was stunned. The other thing that stood out, I remember the legs being so frail, so twig-like. I was actually shocked at how they even worked and held up the rest of his body. I don't know if that was how the beam hit, the beam of light hit. Obviously, I'm kind of haunted with a million questions. Why was it there? Was it trying to contact us? Was this being responsible for the fear we felt? How did it get there? You know, a million questions.
So this 3.5-foot creature did not make any noise.
No, and this is something that this happened right after the Tennessee floods, and we were wiped out on the military base. You know, here in Millington, there were 6 to 8 feet of water here, and, you know, we evacuated, and, you know, Nashville was devastated, and the water had just receded. So, you know, this wasn't, you know, just really dried up, you know, farmland or, you know, anything like that. It was nice, moist soil. When we left the scene and left the cornfield, it was... We were back in the field within 30 minutes. It's almost as though the further away we got from the cornfield, the more that feeling went away. And, of course, reality starts coming in, and I had to get back in the field because now I'm convinced we have evidence. You know, we saw a being, and I want the footprints. I want to go out and find it. Is it still there? You know, there was all these things going through, so we were very anxious to get back out into that field.
Any footprints?
No, we found nothing. I found all of ours. I found the tire tracks. We grid searched. There was nothing. I was very frustrated.
Chase, with no footprints and no record of anything, what do you think? I mean, was it some sort of mass hypnosis, or do you think it was real?
That I can't answer. What I can tell you is that what happened was real. What I saw was real. Whether I was made to see it or not, I have no information on that. I mean, I just, you know, it was a real event. It was something that had been reported to us previously. The witness is extremely credible, very high-profile, professional family, and there were many witnesses. We had 7 witnesses, you know, to these events. Yeah, I'm not sure, Jerry, you know, how it got there, why. It's that being has brought up more questions than, unfortunately, I could answer as a field investigator.
Yeah, I understand.
It's frustrating. And to this day, that area continues to have activity, so we're still watching very closely.
Have there been other incidents investigated by the STAR team like this, similar to this?
Oh, yes, we have. Many cases that are producing the kind of results that this team was designed for. Our main goal in the STAR team is evidence. My goal is to give MUFON something, whether it's the photo, the piece of evidence, the footprint, the proof. That's what all ufologists are looking for and studying through, and why I'll chase 99 in hopes to get that one. It's just kind of what we do, and that is our job. We do have several other cases that are going on. And, of course, the STAR team just doesn't deal with what I call the rock and roll cases, where we can go in and grab evidence. We also deal with abductees and experiencers, and we have very highly trained professionals that, you know exactly how to help our witnesses, you know. It's very common for a field investigator to bond somehow and to identify and actually even be... I'm so sorry. Actually even become friends with witnesses because you're included in extraordinary events.
You know, Chase, in business, location, 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 that's the byword. And in investigations and UFO shows I've done over the years, I've always paid particular attention to geography. And you've been at it for 100 days now. Is there something going on in a certain area? I mean, are there hot spots? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, that's actually identified by our MATCON program. And again, MATCON stands for MUFON Activity Condition. What I noticed was we don't have dispatchers. You know, we don't have teams that sit in, you know, sort through the report. What happened was when we started the team, I was very fortunate that Sandy Gonzalez had offered to be the STAR team CMS administrator. So every report that comes to MUFON, he kind of goes through and does the categorization with the valet classification. So we have category 1, 2, and 3 cases. He alerts me of every category 2 and 3, and then I go in and study the cases and triage to see when it's appropriate to activate the STAR team. Most recently, we designed a program, this MATCON, and what that does is it helps us to monitor and evaluate events. So all reports are viewed, and then we systematically organize them to reveal important information, such as cluster sightings, flaps, or even vigorous activities. We also kind of target and track to help identify objects that are known to a certain area, such as a military base. With the technology of drones and even special projects, we need to better identify what's normal for that area and what would not be considered normal, because we do know that it has been reported and studied that UFOs are interested in nuclear sites, airports, military bases. So we do have a specific position that tracks just those specific areas and is working on research on identifying what we call normal events and other than normal. It's a pretty decent program. It's yielding all sorts of information that we kind of didn't expect. It's an amazing program.
We are talking with Chase Klotsky, and she's on the line from outside Memphis. And she has been the key person, really, for the STAR team, the High-Tech Investigations Unit, Fast Track Unit for MUFON, and she's been busy.
In 50 states, with an organization as popular as MUFON, getting over 500 a month, we're very busy.
Now that's for all of the UFO sightings reports, and then the STAR team takes the cream of the crop, so to speak. Well, one of the reasons we wanted you to come on, and we appreciate you coming on with us, is to explain how detailed this is and what the parameters are.
Yes, this program is pretty solid. The first thing I was tasked to do when I accepted the position and offered and accepted the position was to design a program, and I started from nothing. I had nothing. I started on a piece of paper at my kitchen table, so I didn't have any information from the last program, and that was okay because so much had changed. The last program was completely different because it was funded. They were paid positions. There was a whole entity that I didn't have. So it wasn't important to me to find out what happened in the last program because most of those issues I wasn't concerned with.
So MUFON didn't steal the BAS program. I mean, you didn't just take it and revamp it.
Not at all. I've never met Mr. Bigelow or talked to him. No, this program is strictly MUFON. And it was, like I said, it was designed with volunteers in mind. There are no paid positions in the STAR team. Everything continues to be grassroots, volunteer. Organizing in our organization our most experienced people and utilizing their talents and identifying at a higher level priority cases.
Chase, if we can, I'd like to get a little more specific about the type of cases that the STAR team, investigates. I mean, what are we talking about? Trace evidence, landings, lights in the sky, abductions?
The STAR team, this is what's great about the STAR team. Having the most experienced and specialized people on board is really very helpful. We have a case in Florida that is producing physical evidence that we're waiting on lab results now before we close it off. I can't wait to reveal this case because it's very, very interesting. A credible witness, several witnesses, several sightings. We have physical evidence. We even have reports of MIB activity where after our investigators, two of Florida's best investigators, we're so thrilled to have them, but it was Morgan Beal and Mary Margaret Zimmer, immediately responded to this scene and effectively and forensically gathered evidence, properly tracked everything, marked it, got it ready to send with a chain of custody to the lab, and in the meantime, effectively interviewed the witnesses and just did an outstanding job. It was reported to us a few days later that the witness had come home and a neighbor had approached him and said that there was a strange vehicle out in front of his house. They weren't sure what to make of it. And upon entering his home and going out in the backyard, he found that the very area that we had investigated had been burned.
Okay, you're not talking about a grass fire here. I mean, you're talking about somebody used a flamethrower or something. They torched it.
We believe through our investigation so far, we're still waiting for lab results to tell us about an accelerant or, you know, anything going on. We believe it was a chemical burn, absolutely. It was systematically burned.
Have there been other incidents where a third party shows up and gets involved and, you know? Yeah.
Yes, there have, which is why there's such a strict confidentiality on the STAR Team cases. And I'd like to explain that. This confidentiality has nothing to do with non-disclosure. There is no such thing as a non-disclosure form. That's ridiculous. I don't know a single member in MUFON that is in it to keep secrets. I don't know a single investigator in MUFON that would be comfortable even at the idea of keeping silent about what we do. And there is no such form. No such form. However, we do have confidentiality on active cases. And that confidentiality is to protect our witnesses and it's to protect our investigators and basically to protect the evidence that we're after, and that's what the confidentiality is actually for. Several times, I don't know any entity out there that investigates, whether it be an industrial investigation, insurance investigation, crime scene, or UFO, where anybody would say, you know, the public does have a right to know, so come on in and everybody take a look around at what happened, and then we'll explain it as we go along. You know, usually any investigator in any situation would like time to effectively investigate what they're doing. We owe that professionalism to our witnesses who trust us and why they give the reports to MUFON. Because we do investigate. Others report. We investigate. So that confidentiality, we have had people show up at our witnesses' homes before we got there. We've had witnesses contacted by other people. So confidentiality is a big, big concern. It's written right into our procedure manual, an exact chain of communication when we're on active cases. But as soon as these cases are closed, we want to tell the world. We'll tell anybody. We want to publish them. It's what we do. So to think that the confidentiality is going to carry over after a case is closed is ridiculous. I also know that MUFON has this rumor about black hole of information, and, you know, I just don't understand that because STAR Team launched October 15th, and in November, December, and January in our journal were two of the biggest cases they had in 2010. I can't wait to put some of the other cases that we're working on, but we need that time. MUFON is a scientific organization. So you can imagine, as a scientific organization, us putting out data without backing it up with the very to us. Does that make sense? You know, and Jerry, I don't know any investigator out there that would be happy and satisfied to even consider something like that. That's not what we do. All the investigators and members I know, or even other ufologists that may not even be with MUFON, we all want the same thing. We want the truth, and we want it out there, and we want to know what the government knows. We want to know what other government knows. You know, people, let us know. We want full disclosure.
Okay, that's a good explanation, and I get that explanation from the police departments and from the military and from all investigators. And as a journalist, of course, my object is to get the story as quickly as possible.
Right, and we understand that people want to know, and that's what we do. We just really want the time to let our labs do what they do so that, as a scientific organization, our evidence and the case results that we have can absolutely withstand public and scientific scrutiny. Because they are going to be scrutinized. You know, our photo analysis specialist is amazing. And, you know, he knows that when he puts this photo out and verifies, yes, this is authentic and I don't know what it is and I can't explain it, that there's probably going to be 500 other people that grab that photo and try to do the same thing. So we have to be specific, especially with the reputation of MUFON of being over 40 years of a scientific organization. We have to be that good.
I'm still curious about the specifics of the cases that MUFON investigates. I mean, what kind of cases are we talking about? Are there lots of reports of ETs walking around, or is that a pretty rare report? I mean, what kind of cases are we talking
there,
about?
Anything that yields trace evidence, physical effects, you know, and of course, physical effects could even be your abductions. Right now, we have an abductee in Indiana that we're working with, and he has documented family history as an experiencer. His family has passed lie detector tests, physical exams, psychological evaluations, and right now we're currently in the process of regression therapy and, you know, documenting all the missing time and even some of the physical effects on such things as his vehicle. So, you know, that's a very big case. It's very intricate. We're finalizing some of this, but, you know, it's ongoing.
And this abduction case, was he harmed physically?
That we're not sure of.
Okay.
The regression therapy is ongoing, and we will definitely be able to
get away from the specifics of this individual case and talk about abductions, period. I mean, what's going on there? Are the abductees being harmed or examined, or is it scientific or what? What do you think it is?
The sense I'm getting in the cases that I am specifically involved in, it appears to be more information. The abductees are claiming more information, more connections to claimed hybrids, you know, things like that. It seems to be more informational that we're getting at this point and not so much physical examinations and experiments. I haven't gotten too much of that.
You know, Chase, we're always talking about government disclosure of UFOs and ETs. I've often wondered, why not the ETs just come to MUFON? You guys investigate them all the time.
That would be
they
wonderful.
Know about you, I'm sure.
You're absolutely right, and these are questions we discuss among ourselves as well.
I mean, when did they come to me? I'd love to interview one, put them right on the air.
And but, to tell you the truth, I kind of would rather them come to us first, if you know what I mean.
I've never had one come into my room at night when I'm asleep.
Not that I'm aware of. That is Star Team's mission, is to basically get that evidence. When you were talking about some of the cases that we work, we don't necessarily work a lot of lights in the sky. And sometimes people look at these cases as less than. They're not always your most exciting cases, but they are extremely important in MUFON and should always be taken just as seriously as anything else. Lights in the Sky reports reveal a plethora of information, as to hot spots. We're also trying to figure out how did they get here, how do they work, how do they move, which is why some of the talent that we incorporate in MUFON are our, you know, physicists and scientists. And, you know, that seems to be as much of a membership boom as you know, people like me, regular field investigators that just have a love for ufology and now have time to invest. So, you know, the professionals, I guess, are the ones that are really, really taking a big interest in getting involved.
Chase, these MUFON shows have generated lots of email, lots of responses. And one thing I've noticed is a lot of people, and I've been doing UFO shows for decades, and you've been, and everybody in MUFON's been investigating things for a long time, and some people are questioning the objectivity of us simply because we've seen a lot of evidence that makes us think there's something to it. I mean, you can be objective without being skeptical.
Right, and to be honest with you, a healthy dose of skepticism is exactly what we're looking for.
I'm pretty agnostic about it all.
Right. I mean, if you walk in and you know, for every person that says, you know, I feel like I was coming home from work and it took me 4 hours, it's a 20-minute trip, I don't know what happened, and you're rolling your eyes, we don't want you. You know, that's just ridiculous. We're looking for the truth. Now, whether that's UFOs, aliens, were being visited, something else may be going on. Our mission is the truth, and which is why when we chase 100 cases, you know, 99 of them, you know, turn out really nothing significant that we can put out and report that we haven't done a million times already. But at the same time, a healthy dose of skepticism, we have to maintain that investigator mode. We have to ask the questions. We have to ask them again. We have to ask them a third time in an open-ended questioning session. We have to look for the evidence. If you're not finding evidence ever, or not getting good cases in your state ever, you know, you might want to retrain some of your FIs to go ahead and go out there. That big case that we had in Tennessee started out as a light in the sky case. It was a category one. And, you know, as I interviewed the witness, he appeared more and more credible. I kept asking questions. He was making some pretty extraordinary claims. Orange fireballs, red and white lights in the sky every night. He did report three lights. He never said to me a triangle until we met him. But these were extraordinary claims, and, you know, so my next step was, well, why this area? What's going on? So as I, you know, did the satellite research, I realized it's very rural. We did the soil compound. I found out that we have a sacred site very close to the incident, which are the Pinson Mounds, very, very sacred site. It's an archaeological park now. We found military bases close enough to have an interest, but far enough away that it wasn't probably something from that. We found ley lines intersecting exactly where some of this activity is going on. So now, as an investigator, it's making more sense to me all the different types of claims versus just a light in the sky. We have to do our job as investigators. Mm-hmm. We have to take it to the next level and even think out of the box. I contacted the Historical Society because the newspaper wasn't responding. I talked to law enforcement officers out there, and although he was a little tongue-in-cheek, he kind of sat back and was a little intrigued and actually wanted to know exactly where I was investigating in his county.
Yeah.
And, of course, he didn't get that information. But I called the Historical Society because, you know, historians know the events and past, and I was curious to find out if, you know, they knew of any legends even, you know, Mothman, you know, things that kids grow up on or towns talk about, especially these small towns, that might have this witness automatically assume extraterrestrials. So, you know, they kind of think out of the box and just go for it. And then what I found was, if these things were coming in and all these different types of crafts, it actually made more sense, according to the research and theory in ufology, it actually made more sense here than anywhere else. So, that was interesting.
Over the years in doing these UFO shows, you come to some conclusions or ideas, at least. And Native American burial grounds, there seem to be, there seems to be a connection. Another thing is quartz deposits. Have you ever examined that aspect?
We do, and that is why I did take the soil compositions and studied the makeup of what was underneath top layers. We do, and when I saw when the Pinson Mounds, which I'm not native to Tennessee. I was quite startled to find that. However, it's huge. You know, it's a huge tourist place, an archaeological park. But that made a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. It was
another common denominator is fresh water. A lot of these things seem to happen around fresh water areas. Maybe they're taking on water. I don't know.
Well, there's a great book out there written by one of our field investigators called UFOs in Water, and it's probably the most comprehensive. It's taken off of eyewitness testimony and years of research. It's an amazing book. And, and of course my husband's a submariner, so UFOs I'm very fascinated with UFOs in water.
Yeah, I wonder if he's seen any of those undersea bases we hear about.
I'll tell you.
And I don't want to get him in trouble here.
He doesn't
but
talk about his job. That,
yeah.
I ask. Yes, I ask. And no, he's just nope. Kind of looks at me.
Okay. We don't want to get him in trouble, but I'd sure like to know.
We're looking forward to being able to explore this more and, hopefully he'll retire soon. I'm counting the days and tapping my fingers for it, but that'll be awesome. And he's very interested, too. He would love to do this. He would love
to
do this.
As long as we're talking about the government and the military and all of that, and you mentioned the thing where they burn the evidence in the backyard with a chemical fire down in Florida, and we get reports of this all the time, of possible government interference. What's the deal? I mean, why do they want to cover it up, you think?
Again, that's a question that
I don't want to get you in trouble here.
Involved in trying to answer as mm-hmm. anything else. It's I believe that they probably have a lot to lose, especially, credibility. I mean, who trusts the government? So now to come out and say, well, okay, yes, we have known this for years and years, and yes, okay, that did happen. The government has absolutely no win in coming out, unfortunately. When we do give them that win, I'm sure that, someday we can convince them to disclose information.
True, Chase. The cover-up of the cover-up of the cover-up always gets you in deeper. Plus, I've known a lot of these people over the years, and a lot of them, you got to know, you got to be in a position to know, a need to know. And so I'm not sure everyone knows. You know what I mean?
Well, and, that's kind of how secret organizations work. You don't tell the left hand what the right hand is doing. We know, for instance, in Area 51 or Dugway, or you may sit next to the guy on the bus every day as you go and take your Janus Air flight, and talk very civilly and get to know each other, but you don't know where he works, you don't know what he does, and you're not allowed to talk about it. And a lot of governments have to run that way. It's how you secure information. So if you want to keep a secret, you don't tell 10 people.
I'm not sure the government needs all those secrets. Who's the enemy? Especially in the UFO question, who is the enemy? But that's another question.
Right. That is an excellent question. And, you know, every ufologist is anxious for that answer. You know, who is our enemy? Why? Why keep it secret?
Well, you know, something may be nefarious. I mean, why are we keeping it such a big damn secret? I mean, I sometimes wonder if the ETs are up to any good. Maybe there's a group that isn't. What do you think?
I don't.
Have you seen any evidence of that?
I don't see any evidence of that. The evidence, I have to look back on what I've personally investigated and witnessed, and it just seems to be no different than our behavior when we come across, you know, a place we haven't gone to in the rainforest where we want to examine, you know, the living creatures and how they work and how they colonize and, you know, are they hive-minded. You know, we study them and, you know, eventually as humans we'll take an experiment. My experience is more towards observation study. You know, I'm not so sure. I know all the movies coming out, which is kind of good for MUFON because pop culture has an influence on our membership.
Yes,
you know,
it
does. In the 80s when we had like 6,000 members, you know, the height of E.T. and Close Encounters and all these great movies and TV shows, V and... You know, and then of course we had another surge with the X-Files, so I'm actually looking forward to all these movies coming out. MUFON membership has fluctuated up and down with pop culture and the popularity of UFOs and the interest in society in them. However, the one thing that has never gone down are our field investigators. That number has never declined. So, you know, that's something we think about, but, it'll be interesting because Hollywood puts out, you know, bad aliens, you know, aliens versus humans, alien versus predators, you know. So they have a very different message. And, you know, that's curious.
I think it's more than curious. I think somebody out there doesn't want us to know something. But speaking of secrets, let's get back to MUFON. There's no secrets about the STAR team with the state directors, right?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the non-disclosure fantasy agreement is, you know, ridiculous. Like I said, Jerry, and you must know a lot of MUFON people. Do you know anybody that would sign something like that, let alone come up with that idea? Also, it's probably important to know that the state directors themselves are responsible for reporting activity to headquarters and to their membership. I mean, you know, if for example, you know, Colorado had 50 cases in the last 90 days, where are they? Who's responsible for putting that information out? Well, that's the state director. You know, our international director certainly couldn't call 50 states and state directors and field investigators, you know, every week to find out where they are in cases. You know, it's clearly outlined in the state director's manual that they are personally responsible for the disclosure of their own cases, for their own reporting. And when they have something, they need to put it out there. We couldn't call every state director every month and say, hey, you guys got anything for me? You know, it's very clearly outlined in their manual what the responsibilities are. They're also responsible for recruiting their membership in their states. And, you know, so sometimes I'm a little disheartened when I hear, well, MUFON's losing membership. Well, whose fault is that? Whose responsibility is this? Well, it falls back on the state directors. Now, with that said, that kind of sounds negative. That's how important our state directors are and why we treat them with such respect and pay a lot of attention to, you know, what they're doing and what they need is because they are the direct line, absolutely, between a national organization, an international organization, and where I come from not too long ago, the FI in the field that's standing there with the field manual, a MUFON equipment bag, big eyes wanting to go on investigations. So it's very important what they do, and they need to do it right. and they need to do it in a conscious and effective way for the betterment of our organization and the very people they serve.
Okay, secondly, as soon as the case is closed, as soon as the investigation's over, it's open to the public.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You don't have some cases that have been hanging around for years and somebody's hiding them.
Not that I know of.
Okay.
You know, like I said, we put, since October as STAR team manager, I've had two of the biggest cases in MUFON in the journal. And we've been all over, you know, radio interviews and putting this information out. So, no, that's not my experience at all. Not at all.
You don't have any negativity about MUFON. You're positive about MUFON, right?
MUFON. I'll be honest with you, Jerry, I put in, without exaggerating, easily 60 to 70 hours a week. I wouldn't put that kind of time, money, effort, even a little risking, you know, ridicule in my own community, which I have not experienced. I have half expected a knock on my door, which we have not gotten. You know, I wouldn't risk all this for an organization that I thought was not full-on and truthful and open. It's just not my experience, Jerry. It
okay.
really isn't.
Any closing comment?
Just thank you so much for, you know, getting the message out there and having us and caring enough about what the truth is. And that really is what we are. We're truth seekers. We're ufologists, and we are MUFON. And I would like to invite anybody to, you know, please ask us questions. If you have a question with the STAR team, call me. Ask me. We're on Facebook. Just, you know, search out STAR Team Project. We're, you know, all our information, all my information's out there. So please contact me, ask me questions, and we will respond. We'll give you every honest answer. But watch us walk our talk. That's what's going to show where MUFON stands. We are walking our talk.
Thank you very much, Chase.
You're welcome. Thank you.